everyone, it's Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com, and joining me today on this very special Vodka O'Clock is Joe Navarro, who is an author and a consultant, and he's going to share with us some great information in a short amount of time about nonverbal communication, or something that the rest of us call body language. Joe, welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
So one of the things that I found truly fascinating was actually your own personal origin, because the science itself of the nonverbal communication is fascinating, but then to read your history and, you know, what makes you sort of perfect for this is how you started here in the United States. Can you just give us a quick rundown of that?
Well, I mean, my story is like most stories in America. I was an immigrant here. I came from Cuba. I didn't speak English. And so, as with all immigrants, you know, your first language is really the language of the body, the body language. And I think most immigrants, when they come, they become very sensitive to the body language of others to see if they like you or they don't like you, if they appreciate you, if they want you to come over, if they want you to do something. And so I know that as a child I was sensitive to that, probably more so than my parents, who were, you know, busy just trying to labor their way through this new experience. But, you know, and then later on when I decided to go into the FBI, one thing I quickly learned is that everything we do is really about body language. Whether you're conducting surveillance or you're testifying before a jury or you're conducting an interview, it's not so much the words that are important. It's really about the body language. And of course, literature is really about how descriptive you can be with the body language.
Right. And that's something that I think there are probably authors that, when they're successful, they include this information and you don't even realize that it's there. In movies, I think, because of things like camera shots and, you know, on TV, all the crime dramas, it's very obvious when they're showing these cues. One of the shows that you mentioned in your book is Lie to Me, which is extremely exaggerated, but it's just one of my favorite fun shows. I know that things like The Mentalist, where they talk about doing cold readings on people, they really utilize these sorts of techniques where they'll see if somebody's eyes start to perhaps tear up when you bring up a subject, or if there's a little smirk, or if you've triggered on something when you're trying to question them and get information out of them. So when you don't have the visual, what sort of like tricks or situations can you work in to get that across to somebody?
Well, you know, it's really not about trickery per se. I know that's not the word you were looking for. In fact, as you said that word, your eyes were probably scanning around,
yes,
looking for
they were.
The right cue. It's you know, what differentiates a Marlon Brando from many other actors is really their body language. You can watch all of the Brando movies with the sound off. You at the end, it's not like you won't get the movie. You'll get it. And the reason for that is the great body language. I mean, that simple act of him sitting there just scratching his face, sends a tremendous message, and you know, the great actors tap into that. Great authors tap into that. You know, doing a cold reading is really not about something magical. It's you know, when you see that that the man is wearing a T-shirt and one arm is more tan than the other, okay, that person spends a lot of time on the road. They're in a car or a truck. Are they a truck driver? You look at the shoes, and I mean, you learn. What I've learned in life really is that there are really very few good observers. Most people go through life and they see, but they don't observe.
I'm definitely guilty of that, and I don't know if it's a like need to sort of protect myself. Like, oh, I couldn't dare like make eye contact with all of these people and just, you know, walk by without actually looking. But yet, if I'm sitting and I make it purposeful, I can watch other people and what's going on around me.
Yeah, well, the key to a good observation is really to be non-intrusive, so you don't make eye contact. You learn to look globally without fixing on any one thing. But I mean, as you scan someone very quickly, and a fourth of a second, you can. There's been studies that have been shown that about 70 to 80% of the time, you're pretty much going to be accurate as to whether or not this person is friendly or unfriendly, approachable. Are they kind? And you can get to where you can, you know, pick out things like how well educated they are and so forth. And this isn't about judging people. This is about what we transmit. If we dress ourselves, and our brain controls our bodies, what we do each day is really a reflection of our personality and our health. And you can see it on television. I mean, if you see the show about borders, all you have to do is walk into that room once, and you can tell all the problems this person is having psychologically. You don't have to actually meet the person. And oftentimes, the artifacts that we collect, how we carry ourselves, and so forth, transmit a lot of information. And of course, when you go see a palm reader or any one of these people, that's all they're picking up on.
And one of the things that is coming out is, you know, like you said, it's not about judging others, but yet something nonverbal related hit the news headlines this week, and it was that bald men are perceived as being more powerful. So,
Well, you know. Yeah, and they're perceived as more powerful but less sexy, but that's been around for ages. I mean, I saw studies on that in the 50s.
I think it's making headlines because of the people that are sexy, like Bruce Willis. I think that when there's a celebrity,
yeah,
that they can tie to something, it's, but, you know, media headline again.
Well, I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, I remember reading when the, you know, Popeye series came out, and men were proud to, and they were made out to look powerful. And there may be something to it because of the testosterone issues and so forth. But, this, again, this has nothing to do with whether a person is, the judgment thing of good or bad. It's how we perceive individuals and how they make us feel. And there's very few people out there that would say, yeah, I really like the short, hairy, squatty guy. you hear, oh, I prefer tall, dark, and handsome, or at least when I read Cosmopolitan for those things.
Yeah, you can tell all the Mad Men fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a handsome guy. There's no doubt about it. But you know, those are preferences, and we feel different things depending on what we see. I mean, right now we're in the middle of a presidential election, and something so simple as how President Obama bounds up the stairs of Air Force One makes him out to be youthful, strong, and exciting, versus somebody who maybe just as healthy, maybe just as intelligent, but if they somber up the stairs, that gives us walk slowly up the stairs, that gives us a different impression. So we're at a subconscious level. We are primarily influenced nonverbally. We're very few people are influenced primarily verbally.
And some of the things that people might not think about as far as nonverbal cues are things like, you know, they might not be typically visuals, what we're thinking, like not a facial expression, you know, how much cologne and perfume somebody is wearing, or the condition of their desk, if you're going in for, you know, an interview or something, or if you're meeting somebody for the first time, and, you know, their car might be a mess.
Yeah, well, that's why we call it nonverbals, because it's not just body language. It's nonverbals is anything that communicates a message, a thought, or a feeling, or an idea, but is not a word. So if you cough a lot, that communicates something about you. If you have a messy house, that communicates something about you. If you can't keep time, if you react too slowly to something that arises in front of you, that communicates something about you. If you rise quickly, moving to action, that communicates that you care and that you get it. Some people just don't get it and take forever to react. And so all of these things communicate. As you look at, like I said, the presidential debates, you'll notice that they're always in front of a blue background, or primarily in front of a blue background, because that's the comfort color, that's the color of competence. And that's why you see the chairman of, or the CEO of Apple, Microsoft, Ford, you'll always see them in front of a blue background.
That is a very traditional corporate color.
It is.
Definitely. It's in so many corporate logos.
Yeah, and it's in... And it's also, they're not going to be in front of green, I assure you. But, you know, the Pentagon uses it. But it's, that's part of nonverbals, the research behind color, smell. People put on colognes and perfumes to go out. And actually, if you're dating, that's the absolute worst thing you can do.
Because it's hiding who you are?
Yeah, you want to actually promote your own chemistry, and that will actually help to solidify a longer relationship.
That's great. That's a great piece of advice. Something else that I wanted to get from the crime writer aspect is this, you know, is perhaps a really old myth, but something I have seen on a couple of mystery TV shows, and that is that when a guilty person is finally caught,
yeah,
and they're, you know, awaiting whatever, perhaps booking or awaiting the next step, they'll be the person that falls asleep because there's nothing else for them to stress about.
Yeah.
Is that actually true?
I've never really noticed that. It has to do with what the person has been doing, what their lifestyle is. I'll give you an example. People who have been in jail many times, for them, it's just one more process. They've been through it, so they're not really bothered by it. If you've been arrested 9 times by the time you're 20, you know what the protocol is. what most people, for instance, don't miss is things like, if you're arrested, why would you yawn? And most people don't realize that yawning is a pacifier. When you yawn, it puts pressure on your mandibular nerves, the nerves in that area, and it actually helps you to calm down. And also, if you're really stressed, this sudden rush of air through your mouth, it helps to cool your blood because the palate above your tongue is very vascular, and so that blood that now goes into your brain is actually cooled. It's actually useful when you have babies. If they're yawning a lot, they're probably hot. So here's some nonverbals that people miss. And when I first came into law enforcement, I couldn't understand it. Somebody, why would they yawn? Because I always associated yawning with being bored or...
being bored, sleepy, perhaps, you know, rude.
A pacifier. It's a great way to deal with stress.
What do you think, I don't know if you, because of your crazy busy schedule these days, like you said, it's an election here in the U.S., so that's got, you know, you hopping all over, but have you ever seen a television program or perhaps a book that you think got it right?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of... books. I mean, if you read Steinbeck, you almost feel like you're there. I mean, there's so many great Nabokov, the Russian writer. They're detailed. All the Holmes movies. The detail is really what makes it fascinating. Even Harry Potter is pretty good. But as far as, you know, like television, yeah, Lie to Me was interesting because I think the first two shows were interesting. It was based on Paul Ekman's work. And, of course, television tries to simplify the complex. I think for people who had never studied nonverbals, it was an eye opener.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
But I think for people who have studied this for a very long time, we tend to see that, okay, so you saw a smirk now on television, and the smirk is going to be equated with, or a look of contempt is going to be equated with deception. And that's totally false. It sounds good, but it's not right, because if you ever go to a prison, you will see nothing but contempt and smirks all day long, because that's just how people feel about you. It doesn't mean they're lying. It's the same way that you often see at the TSA lines at the airport, and you see a parent watching their child, a 3-year-old cheerleading child, going to a cheerleading competition. I saw this the other day, and they're frisking this child, and the mother's there looking with contempt. And it has nothing to do with deception. It just has to do with feelings. But if you see it on television, they say, oh, the person is lying. Well, that's just trash. I mean, it's utter tripe. But, you know, it appeals to audiences.
So one of the things that comes up in your books is that it's a lot of these are cues for whether it's the investigator, the detective, whatever the role on the other side is, it's just a cue to look further,
That's exactly right, and that's all it is. There is no Pinocchio effect. There is no single behavior indicative of of deception. These are just behaviors that say, you said something, they reacted to it, it was negative, the question is why? Is it because they don't like me? Is it because it's too personal? Is it because something they've done wrong? You just never know the why. You know, it's I think it was in my book, What Everybody Is Saying, I talk about the lady who is being interviewed on a white-collar crime case, and she comes in, and usually the first 30 minutes I spend calming people down. But as the time increased, she became more nervous. She became more tense. She was biting her lips. She was touching her neck, which is usually a very accurate indicator of some psychological distress. And finally, I just, I thinking myself the clever investigator that I am, I felt like, oh, she's ready to confess right here and now. And I said, ma'am, is there something you want to get off your chest? And she says, yeah. When I parked downstairs, I only had a quarter in the meter. Behaviors that on a show like Lie to Me would have been associated with, oh my God, this woman is lying, she's murdered somebody or something. She's just worried about the meter because she doesn't have any money. And as it turns out, her identity was stolen, and she had nothing to do with any kind of criminal act anyway. So here was a perfect read on my part, but what was behind it? What was behind it was she didn't want to have to pay the $7 fine. And so we went downstairs, and I paid her the meter. But that's the problem with what I see, the CSI. They see it on TV and they think, oh, we're going to like find a fingerprint. I've done hundreds of crime scenes and you never find the latent prints like you find on television. On television, you find these beautiful latent prints. Most people don't roll their finger so that there's a perfect print left behind. It's not that easy.
No, definitely not. I've seen some clues that, really do require some paying attention, such as how somebody fixed their coffee. And, so the coffee cup is sitting there and it was fixed exactly as that person would have had it. I don't know that real detectives actually get the opportunity to have clues placed in front of them that way.
Well, there's some things that, I've been to a crime scene where all of a sudden, you see Marlboro cigarette, Marlboro cigarette, Marlboro cigarette, and then all of a sudden, somebody's found dead and there's a Camel cigarette there. And you have to ask, who is this? Why did they switch? Did somebody come in? Was this an invited guest or an uninvited guest? When if it's sitting on top, okay, so that's the last cigarette butt that was placed there. So this is a recent vintage. Now, I had a case like that, and, I was fortunate because I wasn't a smoker that I picked up on that, because I'm sensitive to the smell, but you just wonder, how many crime scenes people have been to and maybe they don't pay attention to, the little things like the woman who's found on the floor dead and her right earring is missing. And then you wonder, well, why is the right ear missing? So that's one for you.
Well, on TV they do that because they have to take their earrings off to talk on the phone.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, yeah, on TV they do that. And in real life, that's something that happened just like that in Phoenix, Arizona in 1979. And, of course, that was before, telephones kept track of who's calling and so forth. But that's exactly, what she was doing. She was on the on the phone, and she took her earring off. We couldn't, We couldn't figure it out. Look, we had a female agent say, you guys,
Come on, guys. Yeah. Do you think that by advancing the science, and because I know that you teach more than what I'm looking at as criminal techniques, you teach things for like being a better poker player, and you teach corporate executives about these same skills.
Yeah.
And one of the first questions that came up for me was, wow, I wonder if people who study these classes just are simply becoming better liars.
Actually, no. I think the if you were to ask me, are you a better liar because I know these things, I would say no. In fact, I'm a terrible liar. I think what this teaches you is, and why companies spend a lot of money investing in this, is because it makes you more sensitive to others, it makes you more empathetic, and it cuts communication time so much briefly. I mean, can you imagine if you're talking to somebody for you're making a sales pitch, and the person is sitting there nodding their head, but they're pursing their lips. Two different behaviors. Now, most people think, oh, they're nodding their head, they're in agreement, they're in agreement. How much better it is for everybody if you realize that the minute somebody purses their lips or disagreeing with you, why waste their time? The person that's ignorant of this would just continue and continue and continue, thinking, oh, his head is going up and down. No. That means I'm registering what you're saying, but I'm disagreeing with everything you say. A person who studies nonverbal sees the lip purse and says, well, what do you think? Right there. And it cuts it just shaves so much time. And then they perceive you as being empathetic, as being sensitive, as being someone that has what we call emotional or social intelligence. I mean, the last thing you want in your life is to deal with social aardvarks, right? You're talking to somebody in the hallway, and you're giving every nonverbal that you don't want to be bothered, but your feet are pointed towards the other person's feet, and it's the social aardvark that will barge right in just because you turned from above the waist and waved. Well, the socially intelligent will only approach if your feet move to welcome them in. The upper body is just, you know, a social behavior. It's not about deception. It's about how much more competent you can be as a communicator.
Well, a final subject that I wanted to get before you have to run is that all of these, or not necessarily all of them, but definitely some of these behaviors that we do are very specific culturally to where you are. You were just talking about the nodding up and down with your head, and when I was in Poland, that meant no.
Well, in Poland, well, you bring up a good point. There are cultural cues, but in both Poland and in, for instance, in Bulgaria, when you ask a person a question and they nod up and down, yes, that's true. That means no. So you have to add cultural context. But for the most part, in the United States, when you're talking to somebody and they're nodding their head, what they're doing is they're demarking each point that they're receiving, but the lip pursing, for instance, is universal. We know it's universal because children who are born blind, when they talk to other children who are born blind, they do this behavior, and they've never seen it.
That's remarkable that this, you know, the studies can include that.
If you think that's remarkable, when we hear things or we see things we don't like, cover our eyes. Children who are born blind, when they hear things they don't like, they don't cover their ears. They cover their eyes and they've never seen. So this is This is part of our limbic responses. These are part of our paleo circuits. They're millions of years old. And so there are behavioral cues that are universal. Anything that comes from the limbic system is universal, and we share that across the globe.
That's just fantastic to hear some of these details. So I know that your website is jnforensics.com.
Yep.
And you're still writing for Psychology Today?
I do. I try to write at least one article every few months. I have, I think, 27, maybe 20-something articles out there. They can all be found through my website or through I also have joenavarro.net, which is easier. You can just Google my name and Psychology Today articles, and they're out there. And then I have all my books are on Amazon, so they can be found there.
That's great. And because the elections are coming up,
mm-hmm.
Are there any special programs where we can keep an eye out for you?
Well, I'm waiting. I'm doing one for the BBC radio next week, and right now I'm waiting to hear from both the ABC and CBS to see if we're going to do something in the next day or two. Nothing in the works right now.
Okay. One of the people I would love to see you give a critique on is J.K. Rowling, because her interviews are just, it seems like she's not moving, and yet the little things that she does make her look very cold and unwelcoming. So when, you know, if you get any of those BBC opportunities, I would love to see that.
Yeah, well, actually, I have studied her, and if you look at her earlier work, when she first became popular, versus now, you can see where there's been a lot of perception management. But also keep in mind what her history is and where she came from, and the fact that, you know, she was living in council housing and basically on welfare and so forth. And so she has a lot of the behaviors of the person who wants to hide in the open.
Oh, so she hasn't moved past that. She has
a lot of the features of the introvert, the impression one gets is that there's a lot of introversion there, and so there's a lot of there's not a lot of expressiveness. If you compare the interviews, the last one I saw, which was about 2 weeks ago, with her new book, which is for adults, she is so much different than when she was first came on the scene, a decade and a half ago. Yeah.
That's what I thought, too. I thought something, I didn't know if she just seemed bothered by fame or if she was tired of people asking her about the same questions over and over again that she's answered already for 10 years.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that becomes a burden at her level. But she's definitely changed how she dresses. She is, very much still very articulate. But I would still look at her as a very sort of introverted person, it's good for many people. It gives them the ability to take great comfort in being alone. And if you're a writer,
you have to be that.
Yeah, I would think it would be very difficult for an extrovert to be a writer, because extrovert gets their energy from being around a lot of people, and that I think would take you away from writing.
It is definitely. Joe, I don't want to hold you up because I know you've got a million things to do, but thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity. And I would just tell people, you know, if they're, especially if they're writers, to really pay attention to body language, because it's the subtle things that are transacted between humans that that provide so much meaning, such as a pause or a delay in speaking, or, you know, the biting of the lips before a person answers. That actually reveals a lot about the character. Anyway.
That's great.
Good luck to you all.
All right, Joe. Don't forget, guys, that's jnforensics.com or joenavarro.net. You can find me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter and amberunmasked.com. Thanks for listening.